Welcome in all freeloaders to Conspiracy Pilled Unhinged. That's our bonus weekly content that you get by coming over to conspiracypilled.locals.com. This is a free preview of an episode that we released a few months ago about star jelly or star snot or star slime. And this one felt important because it led us down a rabbit trail that brought us to atmospheric beasts. And you can hear in this episode that Abby and I get into the atmospheric beast concept that I had just never heard of before, my deep dive into star jelly and things like that. And then in the atmospheric beast episode, if you've been following Conspiracy Pilled season 4 and you listen to that episode, we reference this episode. So here's the fuller context. If you enjoyed that episode and you want to get this fuller context, this is for you. But again, if you enjoy this episode and you enjoy this type of content and you want to support what we do, download the Locals app on your iPhone or your Android, or go on to conspiracypill.locals.com and support us that way. It's like Patreon, except for people who like free speech. So please enjoy this episode. Without any further ado, we have The Green Blob from Outer Space, Unhinged, episode 53. Have you ever seen the 1958 movie, The Blob? I know. I don't know why I ask, but I thought it would be courteous to ask. So, sorry, let me just adjust some things really quick because my computer is having
What was the movie fun. You asked me if I'd seen last night? And I was like, actually, yes, I have, because we were both surprised by that.
I don't remember, but well, if you haven't seen it, let's just quickly watch part of the trailer.
Every one of you watching this screen, look out, because soon, very soon, the most horrifying monster menace ever conceived will be oozing into this theater.
So that is the 1958 movie, The Blob. And what most people probably don't know is it's actually based on a real life event. And that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. So, yes, it's based on this article from September 27th of 1950. And it is called Flying Saucer Just Disappears. Or saucer dissolves, policeman fine. That's what it says here. I don't know. It depends on which article. This is the only like picture article I could find of it, and I'll read the blurb that's shown here. But then I've got some more stuff on it. So this one from the web that I didn't have to pay for says Philadelphia, September 27th. Four Philadelphia policemen think they know what happens to flying saucers. They dissolve. Patrolman John Collins and Joseph Keenan reported last night they saw a mysterious object about 6 feet in diameter floating to Earth in an open field. They summoned Sergeant Joseph Cook and Patrolman James Casper. Then they approached the object and turned on their flashlights. Collins tried to pick the thing up. The part that touched his hand dissolved, he said, leaving a sticky, odorless residue. Within a half an hour, the entire object had evaporated. It was so light, the policeman reported that it had not even bent the weeds on which it had rested. Cook notified the Federal Bureau of Investigation, but unfortunately, there was nothing to show the FBI agents except a spot on the ground. So this mysterious 6-foot-wide blob of goo, this odorless, like, blob of goo, is what the movie, the 1958 movie, The Blob, was based on. And again, this was like reported during, you know, the Korean War. So it kind of just got this like little blurb. It seems like it's like a National Enquirer, like tabloidy headline, but it's from the Philadelphia Inquirer. And it just kind of went unnoticed by most of the public for a long time. There was a guy who wrote about it in Mysterious Tales, and supposedly he sued the people who made The Blob and said they stole it from him. But either way, the origin of all of this comes back to this Philadelphia Inquirer article. And because it's hard to find the full article and a lot on it, I actually did find this source from mysteriousuniverse.org, .org. And I'm going to read a little bit of this one, and then we'll get into it. So, again, this talks about on September 27th, 1950, the Philadelphia Inquirer readers were entreated to a bizarre headline which read, "Flying Saucer Just Dissolves." The article told the tale of Joe Keenan and John Collins, two veteran Philadelphia police officers who spied a strange object plunging through the night sky less than 24 hours before, resulting in an encounter that neither man would ever forget. According to the officers, they were making their evening rounds in their patrol car when they turned down a desolate side street between Vera Avenue and 26th Street. As the two police officers rounded the corner, they noticed a large glittering mass drifting upward or drifting towards an open field approximately half a block distant. The bewildered Keenan and Collins wasted no time racing towards the unidentified falling object that was sparking under the headlights' glare. One of their patrol cars seemed to halt. The officers swiftly retrieved their flashlights and rushed towards the quivering domed mound of what they described as purple jelly. The perplexed policemen observed that the strangely pulsating heap, which they claimed glistened beneath their flashlights. The officers estimated that the circular mass was approximately 6 feet in diameter and nearly a foot thick at the center. The edges sloped down the peaked top of this glob, as Frank Edwards dubbed in his tome Strange World in a chapter titled Police in the Purple Glob. That's actually what I meant, Strange World, not whatever I said earlier. Tapering to a lip that was just a couple inches thick, when they turned off their flashlights, the men discovered that the thing emitted a faint purplish, perhaps bioluminescent glow that illuminated the darkened field. The most disturbing thing about this odd object, according to the officers, was the fact that this iridescent gelatinous substance seemed to vibrate of its own accord. There's even one report that claimed the entity was oozing up a nearby telephone pole. Regardless of the limits of its mobility, the fact that this thing moved at all seems to indicate the officers in question that this blob-like entity was almost certainly a living organism. What are your thoughts on this blob, this article?
Okay, so this is... Okay, the first fascinating thing is the idea that something can be physically present in our world, but mm-hmm. not real in the way that we conceive of real, right? That something could manifest physically, and then when you touch it, it just turns to goo or whatever, you know? And then it's the goo is sentient. Like,
so, there's so much about this story that you have to either believe the four Philadelphia police officers made up and then stuck with, or you have to say that science is kind of lying when they say they've solved this one. And honestly, the main point of it, and we'll get into it, but the main point of what I want to show is that there are a lot of people who are professionally uncurious, including scientists, when, again, this is a real eyewitness report. Nobody's negating that this happened. In fact, right. I'm about to go through a ton of reports that nobody's saying didn't happen. This stuff's been studied in labs, been photographed. It's a very real phenomena known as star jelly, and it's got a very long history. And then you'll get people that will come up with a ridiculous explanation and say, this covers all of it, and shut up. And it's just so funny to me because you don't have to. I don't know. I say you don't have to. I feel like there's ways that you could talk about this as a scientist or as a atheistic materialist and say, well, this is just something we don't understand. But even that is too much for so many of these people, including how stuff works, where they just can't admit the world is weirder than they want it to be.
It's funny because ever since I was a kid, I loved the weird things on the edges. I've always loved the weird things on the edges. I've always loved talking about them. And I don't understand the minds. I do get it because I understand that it's like a fear thing, that you people who don't want to go there are afraid of the world being weird.
Right.
But it's so fun.
Yeah. Yes. So One of the I've mentioned this podcast before without naming it, but I'm going to name it tonight because it just drives me nuts. So there's a podcast I listen to all the time for almost every episode we do. I listen. It's only 15 minutes long. I don't suggest it, but you can if you want. It's called Skeptoid, and it's interesting to me because there's another episode in here about this thing called guerrilla skepticism, which again, that's a whole like hour long episode we'll do in the future. But essentially, the idea is that there are these people who are paid by organizations and scientists and universities to edit Wikipedia pages to lie about things. They're just like this group of, they call themselves guerrilla skeptics. But what they do is they just go into Wikipedia and they take out doctor in front of someone's name if they don't like what they're saying. So they'll like try to decredit them in that way. And they're part of people who fund this thing called Skeptoid. And Skeptoid said, well, we have to discount everybody that said that this stuff fell from the sky. We're just going to right out of the gate say that didn't happen. And he said, because we can't trust that they actually meant it. Like it was like he said they're what he said is I'm assuming that they're assuming that it fell out of the sky. But in this case, the most famous one, the police officers watched it fall from the sky. Two of them reported watching it fall from the sky. So people like that just drive me nuts. And that's the crux of a lot of this issue. So as I said, star jelly, this is what it's been known as for a really long time. And it's got a really long history. And there's a description that's going to vary. And I'm going to explain why. I think the one thing that Skeptoid got right is that not all cases are star jelly or are the same thing. So I think a lot of the variances are because there are a few oddball cases that are something else or are something explainable. And then they lump that in and say, see, now they're all explainable. They're all the same thing. But they'll do both. They'll say, well, they're not all the same thing. But it is because I like having a scientific explanation instead of saying, yes, some of this, we have no idea what it is. And one of those cases is this picture here. This is what is known as star jelly. This is actually one of the pictures that has been taken of star jelly where they tested it and had no idea what the hell this is. Like, this is one of the ones where there is literally no known scientific explanation for what that is. So that is one picture of star jelly.
Okay.
And I'll show a lot more, but that's one. Generally, it's a gelatinous substance that's sometimes found on grass, or less commonly, it's found on branches and trees. Again, which would make you feel like it did fall from the sky. It's often described as a translucent or grayish white gelatin that tends to evaporate shortly after having fallen or after having been touched. Again, in the case of the police officers, when they shine their flashlights on it, it was like a bioluminescent purple. Also, some of these things, I'm going to read them directly from Wikipedia to prove a point. And this is one of the quotes. It said, folklore claims it is deposited on the earth during meteor showers. But it's kind of disingenuous because it's actually not folklore. It's a lot of eyewitness accounts as well. So they just leave that little piece out. So they're often associated with meteor showers. It's also known as astral jelly, star rot, star shot, star slime, star slough, star slubber, star spurt, and star slutch. This is the weirdest one.
Some we should have put like an age restriction on this episode. Okay, two things. One, because I need to say it so I can stop thinking about it.
Okay.
Star Trek. I came up with a Star Trek episode, and it was inspired by the Star Trek episode in Voyager where gel packs get a virus. So my whole episode idea is based on this one interaction where an ensign runs onto the bridge and says, "Captain, it's the gel packs. They've become sentient." And yeah. Okay.
How'd that never get made? How did that never get made?
I know. I thought I was going to make it big with that.
Yeah.
But we've been talking about talking around for a while, the idea that like space itself is a different substance than a void. What if it's not like star? What if it's just space? What if that is
falling space? Like astral fluid, or what do they call it? Somebody in chat will know. We've had people in the chat asking us about it recently.
Like, it would make sense with a meteor shower.
Space silica. Yeah. That's interesting. No, that is a very interesting thought, right? That there is something physical to the barrier between us and space, right? That there is some type of gelatinous substance. I mean, things like Operation Fishbowl, we haven't even touched on. So.
Right. There is a firmament, and it's gel.
It's gel. Well, let's save that for the end because I want to get into like all of what we think it could be. But I want to go through some of the stuff. One of the things I'm going to mention before we get into more about star jelly is that we talked about a very similar substance a few weeks ago on the I can't remember the name of the episode. It was the one about the Italian alien cult, the friendship cult. We talked about a thing called angel hair. You remember this one?
Yeah.
So angel hair is this sticky, fibrous substance that's reported to be in connection with UFO sightings. And then sometimes in manifestations of the Virgin Mary, there's this whole backstory that people give it where it's like the Virgin Mary like tore her shroud and it's threads from her, and it's some weird thing.
But yeah.
Anyway, more often it's associated with UFO encounters. And it's been described as being a cobweb like thing or jelly, which is interesting. And again, the only explanations that have been given is the one that we gave last time that the scientists gave about the 1954 Italian UFO case about migrating flying spiders, which was a pretty stupid argument considering they literally 10,000 people saw a UFO and it was not a spider, right? One of the other ones I didn't give is this comes from Wikipedia. It says atmospheric electricity may cause floating dust particles to become polarized, and the attraction between these polarized dust particles may cause them to join together to form long filaments, which is interesting because it's still like one of those weird, world is weird kind of things that if this is true, why would scientists not be interested in like figuring out this, right?
Instead, I like that explanation because someone's at least trying to come up with something sufficiently weird to explain the weird phenomena.
Right. And then one of the things that gets lumped in with angel hair is a thing called angel grass. And it's when short metallic threads fall from the sky, forming intertwined loose masses. But we know what this is, right? It's chaff. Like the government does this. It's chaff. It's cloud seeding. It's that stuff that they put in the air. They tell us they put in the air, but then they say they didn't put it in the air. But it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, no, again, they can clump in a thing that they know, which is angel grass, which is metallic filaments, which is not a jelly cobweb-like substance, and then just say, well, see, we know what it is. But also, we don't want to talk about what it is because we don't want to talk about how much we put chaff into the air, like how much we put metallic filaments in the air and in clouds. So back to, and again, like, so what I want to say about those two last thing is that one of them, there's just not a lot on, which is angel hair, and it's just really unexplained, but it's also connected to UFOs. And the other one is, well, no, I mean, it's easy to tell what it is, but the government doesn't want you to talk about it. So, but star jelly is a totally different thing. Like, it's still, there's no conclusive, even from the scientific community, conclusive, like, this is what it is. And it has a long history going back to the 13th century, starting with a man named John of Gaddesden. And he mentions Stella Chiray, which is Latin for star of the earth or earth star. In his medical writings, he describes it as a certain mucilaginous substance lying upon the earth and suggests that it might be used to treat abscesses. It's a medical journal that he's writing. And the medical journal is called the Rosa Medicinae or the Rose of Medicine. It's supposed to be this like big, you know, like Grey's Anatomy, like this big compendium of like all of the medical knowledge at the time.
Okay, and that's interesting though, because it seems like throughout all of history, every time we find a weird thing, we try to use it as a miracle drug.
Oh, 100%. And that's exactly what this is. But what's really hilarious about this is the thing on star jelly in his medicinal book literally just says, it might be good to put on abscesses. Like, it might be. I don't know. Why don't you go find some star jelly and just rub it into your gaping wound?
Abscesses, yeah.
Yeah. Geez. So then in 1440, an English Latin dictionary had an entry for stir slime. It's the Latin equivalent given to azub, or gives the Latin equivalent of azub, which is a term for falling or shooting star. And around this time, the Welsh had it in their dictionaries as well, and they called it pudrecer or whatever. It means rot from the stars. So that's where you get star rot is another name for star jelly, star slime. Because a lot of cases, not the Philadelphia one, but a lot of other cases talk about it being very stinky, very smelly. Also, some people have tasted it and they said it was just watery. I don't know. So I don't know.
Look at this weird stuff. I'm going to put it in my mouth and on my abscesses. Like, what is wrong with people?
Alchemy, dude. That's what's wrong with people.
Yeah.
So moving forward in 1846, we've got a case in Lowville, New York, which is a A luminous substance estimated at 4 feet in diameter fell, leaving behind a heap of foul-smelling luminous jelly that disappeared quickly. And this was written about in the Scientific American. So again, not a tabloid. In 1979, on August 11th in Frisco, Texas, a Sybil Christian of Frisco reported the discovery of several purple blobs of goo on her front yard following a Perseid meteor shower. And a follow-up investigation by reporters and an assistant director of the Fort Worth Museum of Science and History discovered a battery reprocessing plant outside of town where caustic soda was used to clean impurities from the lead in the batteries. And this resulted in a purplish compound as a byproduct. So that's the explanation given for this one. But again, the compound they're talking about was solid. It was not a gelatinous substance. So a lot of people will point right to this one and say, well, this is definitely what it was because some scientists told us that's what it was. And it doesn't ever explain how this caustic soda from a battery factory like floated over into her yard and became gelatinous. The only explanation given on that is that there are people who said that she was trying to clear the gelatinous substance out of her yard with a hose. And they're claiming essentially that it only became gelatinous because of the hose. But again, I can't find anything saying this caustic soda mixture that is a solid in a factory becomes gelatinous. You know what I mean? It's just like people just gloss over. And then again, because it's 140 years old, it's hard to find much information on it. So, or not 140, I'm sorry. It was 1979. I was looking at the wrong date. But still, it's over 40 years old, right? So it's not as mm-hmm. widely reported.
Yeah. Everything before the 80s is old.
But, you know, like legitimately, though, like before the internet, like oddities like this, they would just show up as an article and there would be no follow up. There's no like people.
Nobody chases looking it down.
Nobody's chasing these things down. So in 1983, in North Reading, Massachusetts, a man named Thomas Grinley reported finding a grayish white oily gelatin on his lawn, on the streets, on the sidewalks and dripping from gas station pumps. And what I find interesting is the ones that are explained other than the Philadelphia one are kind of like the varieties. And it seems like most of the ones that are unexplained are this white, oily, grayish substance, right? So I don't know what to do with the one in Philadelphia, but it's weird. Again, this is one that they saw fall from the sky.
Right.
It's weird. And I don't know if how much of the purple luminescence came from the flashlights and the street lights and things like that, that could, you know, and other people are seeing it in the morning. So maybe that's why they're seeing it as grayish white. But in 1994 in Oakville, Washington on several dates, a gelatinous rain fell on this area. And I have an article on this about the Oakville blobs. I'm just going to read part of this because I think it sums it up really well. So this comes from Discovery, discoveryuk.com. It says, Oakville in Washington State was accustomed to rain, lots of rain. However, the torrential kind of that fell on the 7th of August, 1994 was no ordinary rain. Residents in the small city reported what fell from the sky was not water, but gloopy, translucent blobs, each no bigger than a single grain of rice. Again, Skeptoid saying, well, no one actually saw it fall from the sky. I'm assuming that they're assuming, you know what I mean? Like, If the assumption makes you an asshole, assuming someone's assuming, even though they're telling you differently, makes you a bigger asshole. So again, because we got another police officer report here. One police officer, David Lacey, recounted seeing the goop hit his windscreen, obviously falling from the sky, while on patrol at 3 a.m. Speaking on the television program Unsolved Mysteries, he compared it to Jell-O. And he said, quote, we turned our windshield wipers on. It started smearing to the point where we could almost not see. Another local, Dottie Hearn, described it as looking like hail laying on top of the wood box and everywhere else.
Okay, I believe Dottie. Just a name Dottie. Like Dottie, that is a trustworthy old lady right there.
A lot of people discount Dottie for something I'll bring up here in a second, but I think she's trustworthy. Over the next 3 weeks, there would be five more occasions of reports of raining blobs over an area of some 20 square miles. The very day of the raining blobs, people started getting sick, both Officer Lacey and Dottie Hearn among them. There were reports of people developing flu-like symptoms from proximity or from contact or proximity to the blobs, even of animals dying. Officer Lacey described being violently sick and having difficulty breathing. Dottie Hearn collapsed, also finding it hard to breathe and was hospitalized for 3 days with an ear infection. So what was the mushy goop and did it have any connection with the reported sickness? So a lot of people will say, correlation does not equal causation, which is fair. But where they try to discount Dottie is they'll say, well, she was hospitalized with an ear infection. That explains everything. But do ear infections cause you not to be able to breathe and feel like you're having a heart attack? Maybe I'm wrong on ear infections, but I don't think they do. So even if she got sick and one of the symptoms was an ear infection, again, that does not mean that it was only an ear infection. There was no cause of the infection or the hard to breathe or things like that, right? So let's see.
Sounds like she got some gel in her ear. Maybe we shouldn't like put it on abscesses, people.
Sounds like she got some star slutch in her ear.
Gross.
Sunny Bartcliffe, Dottie Hearn's daughter, suspected a correlation between the raining blobs and her mother's illness, so she sent a sample of the Oakville blobs to the Hazardous Material Unit and Department of Ecology of Washington State. On Unsolved Mysteries, microbiologist Mike Dowell recalled finding two specimens of bacteria in Oakville blobs. One of these was known to infect the human digestive system. So again, I just want to point out that this is the other thing all the skeptics leave out, is that they did test it and did find that it could make people sick. According to an article in the New York Times on the 20th of August, 1994, scientist Mike Osweiler of the Washington State Department said they found a number of cells of various size and two types of bacteria in the blobs, but were unable to identify them. They did, however, note that the cells did not have nuclei. This was significant in that it refuted a previous claim that the blobs contained human white blood cells, which do have nuclei. Let's see a little bit more. So what were the Oakville blobs? A small but vocal contingent believes that they were jellyfish parts, to be precise. So I'll just tell you what it says in this part. Essentially, there was bombing tests like 50 miles away off the coast, and some people believed that they were blowing up jellyfish, and that the jellyfish parts were getting into the clouds, and that it was raining down jellyfish matter, which sounds a little bit ridiculous.
Okay, but jellyfish are aliens, confirmed.
Jellyfish are aliens. Yeah, well, there's more about jellyfish aliens in this episode. That is not the last jellyfish alien reference you'll get.
Oh, wait, no, not jellyfish. Octopuses. Now I'm confused. Okay.
Well, we're also going to talk about H.P. Lovecraft in this episode, so.
Good.
You're on to something. But here's the most interesting part of this article. The truth is not out there, it says. All the original uncollected blobs have long disappeared, and there's no known remaining samples of the Oakville blobs, including at the Washington Department of Health. In fact, they apparently have no record of ever receiving any. So, shut up about it. Also, when scientists look into it, the evidence just disappears magically, which I find interesting. In 1996, we have a case in Kempton, Tasmania. And this one is the most interesting to me because it starts with a green glowing meteor that was reported flashing across the skies of Tasmania just outside of Hobart. And the next morning, Mrs. Marlene Smith of Kempton noticed that her cement walkways were littered with strange slime. She described it as blobs of white translucent jelly found all over the concrete, quote, queer stuff. Also an unnamed farmer also found small or similar white blobs in his paddock on the outskirts of Kempton. We've never done an episode, but I think my next Unhinged episode will be about the green meteorites, because in 1948, the United States government was so concerned with these green meteorites. And where did we last see in the news a green meteorite? Do you remember? We talked about it on the show.
We have.
It was the Vegas alien sighting last year.
Yeah.
The cop is sitting in his car, and on his camera, he sees a green meteorite streak across the sky and then gets a call that there's aliens, like 8-foot tall grays, in the back of someone's yard. Like, the fact that the government didn't know what they were, like, there's still no good explanation for this particular type of green meteorite. And as someone who saw one, they're so strange that you can't even describe to people. Like, the camera doesn't really, like, do it justice. But there were reports all throughout the 40s and 50s of these giant green meteorites streaking across the sky over nuclear facilities and then changing direction. In fact, pilots were seeing them, and the government set up observation centers all over the United States to try to figure out what the hell these were, and then just ran out of money. So, again, that's a future episode, but I just want to point out, like, the green flash meteorite, or green fireballs, as they're called sometimes, is so connected with weird UFO things that even our own government wasted tons of money trying to figure out what these are and came to no conclusion. And there's still no good scientific conclusion. So, 2009, these keep going. They're coming up to modern day. 2009 in Scotland, star jelly was found in various parts. And according to The Guardian, it says, quote, people reported finding piles of single blobs of the mucus on the ground or on posts, even on a tractor. BBC Radio Scotland sent samples to experts at the Royal Botanical Gardens in Edinburgh and the Macaulay Institute in Aberdeen, which researched soils and other environmental factors, but the tests were inconclusive. So again, even as late as 2009, they can't figure out what this is. And a lot of the things that how stuff works and Skeptoid and places like that will tell you that they've figured out are easy to test and know. Like things like DNA would be in them and stuff like that. So in 2012, blue balls of jelly rained down on a man's garden in Dorset. Upon further analysis, these proved to be sodium, I hate these words, polyacrylate granules, a kind of super absorbent polymer with a variety of common in agricultural uses, and they were most likely already present in the ground in their dehydrated state, went unnoticed until the water soaked. So you know what this is, essentially? It's the same substance as found in diapers. And I don't know what the exact agricultural use is, but the granulized dehydrated version of it is used for some agriculture. I didn't look that far into it, but it's a known thing. And so when it rained, it basically like turned into like Orbeez, like in a diaper, like, you know, so that one's explained. But again, because that one is explained, people will throw the baby out with the bathwater. And that's why.
It's explained, but it's also like why the fuck are you putting this diaper gel? Well,
again, the answer is probably something like atrazine. It's probably not good. Right. It's probably really bad for, you know, whatever they're doing. But we know what it is. Right. So weird. There's also star jelly in literature and fiction going all the way back to the 1600s. And I grabbed a few examples. The first one I grabbed is from 1641. The poet John Suckling wrote, "As he whose quicker eye doth trace a false star shot to marked place, does run apace and thinking it to catch a jelly up do snatch." So again, chasing a falling star, finding jelly, right? In 1656, the poet Henry Moore observed that, quote, this is written in like old English style. "The stars eat those falling stars, as some call them, which are found on the earth in the form of a trembling jelly, are their excrement." So he's saying it's excrement. It's star poop, right?
Star poop.
In 1679, John Dryden wrote, "When I had taken up what I supposed a fallen star, I found it had been I had been cozened with a jelly."
Huh.
In 1825, Sir Walter...
It's space. I'm set on this. It is space.
It's like bringing down space, like bits of space fluid. I didn't even think of that theory. So that's interesting. In 1825, Sir Walter Scott wrote in his novel, The Talisman, quote, "Seek a falling star, said the hermit, and thou shalt only light on some foul jelly, which in shooting through the horizon has assumed for a moment an appearance of splendor." And the last one, as I said, we're going to talk about H.P. Lovecraft, because in 1927, he wrote The Color Out of Space. I've talked to you about this one before, but it's like this, it's like this existential horror about a color that can't be described, but it's like wreaking havoc. But the story takes place 50 years after a meteor falls to Earth in June of 1882. And this quote about the book comes from Wikipedia. It says, "At the time, local scientists take a sample from the meteorite and are perplexed by several strange behaviors that it exhibits. The sample disappears overnight after being stored in a glass breaker. When attempting to take a second sample from the meteorite, the scientists reveal a globule encased in the meteor emitting a strange color. It was, quote, only by analogy that it was called a color at all." And again, that's that strange, like, it's a color, but it's outside of the visible spectrum of light. Like, we have no idea what to call it.
Okay, so could it be fair to say then that different people are seeing and naming it as a different color? Like, the cops say it was purple and...
Right, because it's not like... But isn't that weird, though? Because if it is emitting a color that, like, we don't know how to name, would it show up to people in different ways if, like, catching glimpses of... this
right or shining normally, different light on it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. One of the scientists hit the globule with a hammer and it disintegrates. Overnight, the meteorite disappears after being struck by a bolt of lightning. And then it goes on where like this
what?
Color. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it goes on to say this color like spreads out and like poisons the soil and kills the animals and makes people sick. And everything like we heard in Oakville, Washington.
Right.
Is happening. Right. But science has solved this, guys. We have some scientific explanations here.
Good. I can't wait.
The first one is, and I'm going to butcher a lot of these names, is Myaxerium nucleatum, which is a clear gelatinous fungus that grows on decaying wood. Because that explains these stories, is a known fungus that grows on wood and does not disappear at touch and does not come in 6-foot floating globules.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Like, I love how people think where they're like, I need to explain this so bad that I'll give the worst possible explanation just so and you just shut okay up about the world being weirder than we want it to be.
Because they're more comfortable sitting with a bad explanation than admitting that something can just be weird.
It's more than that. It's like we have this modern, this chronological chauvinist belief that we've discovered everything, that science TM has answered every question. I legitimately don't know why people become scientists if we're constantly taught science is described at all. We already know it all. Like,
right.
What is there to, and that's not true. So I get why people do become scientists. But like, if I, being taught that, I don't even see the allure of
it. Why would you become a scientist? Yeah.
And especially considering like, if you know any scientific history, if you do find something new, the scientific community will do everything they can in their power to shut you down until 50 years later, maybe you win a Nobel Peace Prize.
Right.
Or a Nobel Prize in science or something like that. But like, maybe. Which has happened to people. And then and then your next bit of research, they still hate you even after you've got the Nobel Prize, right? Here's my favorite explanation. Here's my favorite explanation. Frog remains. One case in Scotland has led many to close the book. They know what this is. And from howstuffworks.com, it says, in 2015, Chris Packman sent a specimen of star jelly to the Natural History Museum of London for a DNA analysis by David Bass, who confirmed it was from a frog. He also found traces of magpie DNA on the jelly, which may point to the demise of the frog. So again, if you look up what is star jelly, howstuffworks.com says, we know what it is, guys. This is the explanation for all of it. It's this. It's tiny little bits of digested frog that was thrown up by birds. So apparently
a lot of
magpies got very sick at the same time and just puked in this massive puddle in Philadelphia. And like there's, Everett, Washington, just sick birds everywhere for weeks. This is retarded.
I mean, birds aren't even real. Birds aren't even
real. This is bird battery acid is what it is. So it's the corrosive battery acid that we were talked that one story tells about, but it didn't come from a factory, it came from birds. This to me is by far the stupidest explanation because that like that's very zoomed up. And it's very clear that that's like an egg sac from like a frog in there. And it doesn't look like, again, it doesn't have the translucent look of this. It doesn't look the same.
Right.
Right? And beyond that, by the way, this is also known as spawn jelly, if you want a good name for it. So like star jelly is just spawn jelly. Scientists commissioned by the National Geographic Society have carried out tests on samples of star jelly found in the U.S. and have failed to find any DNA whatsoever in the material. And again, we've already pointed out a few cases where like inconclusive, no DNA, it doesn't have a nucleus, like all the things that would point to this not being a biological puke of a frog are there. But one case in Scotland where somebody found that on the ground, said it looks like star jelly and turned it in. Now it's all star jelly is just half digested frogs, apparently. So I just love these explanations. I didn't pull up a lot of sources on this one, but I heard it in every podcast I listen to, so I'm going to bring it up. Deer jizz. I'm not joking.
I didn't even know what that is.
Deer semen.
Deer. Oh, okay.
Like during mating season, they'll on the ground, and like it looks kind of jelly, And it's like, apparently deer are just having massive orgies in Philadelphia. And
oh my God.
All over.
I mean, at least somebody said it. And at least somebody said it out loud. Like that it's, that's what it looks like.
I look, we have to talk about the very serious problem of deer orgies. The sexual revolution.
They need to be stopped.
The deer, the hardest. Yeah, they're living like it's the swinging 60s.
real quick, thank you so much to Kaniac for the $10 locals rant or tip or whatever you call them. 100 locals coin.
Says, y'all rock. Sorry I can't join tonight. Working. Keep on keeping on. Thank you, Kaniac.
Keep on it.
Appreciate it. Hopefully you enjoy the episode and our references to deer semen when you get a chance. I had to say it. It's in the scientific papers.
Sure. This is what happens when I let PJ do an episode. This is every time.
Every time. I didn't know that was an explanation when I first started researching this. So,
You didn't guess. You didn't guess that. You weren't going to find a way. PJ desperately searching for the one person who said it was jizz.
somebody, give me deer spunk. Let's get that as an answer. The next answer is slime molds. So slime molds can appear suddenly, and they exhibit a very gelatinous appearance at first and later change to a dust-like form when dispersed by rain and wind. But that's only one particular type of slime mold, and we actually have a picture of it. It's right there. So again, not translucent, not in massive quantities,
right.
Not really particularly jelly, except in its early stage, it is a jelly. And again, it looks absolutely nothing like.
This is actually more gross.
Right. But my point is it grows out of, it's very clearly a mold. It's very clearly not what everybody else is describing.
Right. It's less.
Liquid. Nor do molds fall from the sky. But again, if you're Brian Dunning from Skeptoid, you have to instantly just throw that one out because it cuts against your entire case because you're professionally uncurious. But the slime mold thing, just, I don't know. What I did find funny is that this one is a name I can't pronounce. Enterodermicium lycopodium. And what's funny about this one is that one of the names for it in Mexico is caca de luna, which means moon poop. So moon poop. That's one of them. By the way, here's just some pictures of other slime molds. And again, there's just no slime mold that looks like what they're describing as star jelly. So, but again,
okay.
Some people
can
just,
I take this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Opportunity to insert that something that's becoming more and more popular on like TikTok as a product is slime. Is like you buy this like slime that's like fun to manipulate.
Is it just like a reliving our 90s childhood thing with like Nickelodeon?
I think so.
Yeah.
Cause it's like not just for kids. It's like a stress ball, but it's slime.
Well, we're in such a dying society that everybody would rather live in nostalgia than like create. So it makes sense. Unfortunately, the reasoning is that because we're just letting our society die in front of us. And
yeah.
Not creating anything new or interesting. Other than the frog excrement or whatever you'd call it, frog puke, bird puke of frogs, whatever. The other main explanation is slime molds is one that's given a lot. But the one that, again, if you listen to these videos, you'll hear people say unequivocally, this is 100% birds throwing up frogs, or unequivocally, this is 100% nostoc. And in fact, when you look at nostoc on Wikipedia, it literally just says, also known as star jelly, also known as troll's butter, spit of the moon, fallen star, or witch's butter. It just unequivocally says, this is the answer to star jelly. It's nostoc.
Huh.
And nostoc is a genus of microorganisms that form like a large colony. And during dry periods, the colonies desiccate. They become like an inconspicuous thin layer on the ground. And they remain in that state, according to some sources, I don't know how true this is, they'll remain there sometimes for decades in this like state of powder. And then when it rains or certain things or certain environmental things are met, the Nossot colonies will swell up into a jelly-like mass, which is thought to have fallen from the sky. Again, is what they're saying. But the thing is, Nostoc was coined by another alchemist named Paracelsus. And we've talked about Paracelsus before in the Gold Juice episode. And I'm sure we'll talk about him again if we ever get into like the homunculi or things like that. Paracelsus is he did invent a lot of like scientific methods that we use. I can't remember what we said in the Gold Juice episode. It's something like modern day chemistry is like based off of Paracelsus or something. But he was also an alchemist. He wrote about homunculi. He wrote about gold juice, and he wrote about this thing called that he named Nostoc. And that's because the name comes from a mixture of the English word nostril and the German word for nose hole, which is Nostoc, because Nostoc looks like snot. It looks a lot like snot.
Right.
In fact, it's so green
right,
that there is 0% chance that this matches any. And I mean, a single one of the stories I read earlier.
Right.
Not one of them.
It's also just got a different texture to it.
Yeah. I understand why this is called troll butter, right? Like it looks like troll snot. And again, yeah. I believe this is the same as witch's butter. That's what Paracelsus said. He said, this is witch's butter. This is troll's butter. This is something we're going to use in alchemy. I don't know what it is, but he would have been familiar with star jelly, and he never claimed they were the same. Just modern day scientists go, white, grayish, oily thing that falls from the sky and is weightless and doesn't stink. Oh, I know what it is. It's green blue algae, which is the other name for this is green blue algae.
Right.
And it's something that most people have probably seen somewhere. You know what I mean?
Right.
So again, this is just unequivocally, this is what it is. Don't ask questions. Don't ask why it's not translucent and white and fluffy and all the things that everybody who's ever seen star jelly. And in fact, people who have taken pictures of star, like legitimately, this is a picture that is star jelly that they have not been able to determine what it is. And I have to believe, according to all that's the same thing.
Right.
Like you have to be stupid, but again, they don't expect you to look into this. Just take them at their word. Right. I mean, the only other thing you could say is, you know, does it disappear? It does disappear when the sun's been out for a while, but it'll turn into like a black, it'll turn black and then grow and then like go away over time when it dries out, because it's a colony of microorganisms that when they get wet, grow, and then they, but it's nothing like I touched it and then seconds later it was just gone. Same as angel hair, same as star jelly.
Right.
This is not that at all. It says it retreats back into the gravel and leaves behind a black patch on the ground. Again, the patch on the ground was, well, how did they describe it? I want to make sure I'm getting this right. If I go back to the article, it says, Cook notified the Federal Bureau of Investigation, but unfortunately there was nothing to show the FBI agents except a spot on the ground. It doesn't say black though. I don't think it's the same thing. Obviously, I mean, it's not, it looks like a big pile of snot, you know? Also it just doesn't match size, right? Like, it spreads out even like algae. And then sometimes it forms these hollow balls known to be 5 to 20 centimeters, not 6 feet, not 4 feet, not these large globules that have been shown and talked about throughout all of history. So I want to talk about more paranormal explanations. And this is where I want to get into like, what could it be? Because I think at the end of the day, I'm comfortable saying this is weird. I don't know what this is. Whereas like other people are like, I have to know what it is. And it has to be something that's already been documented. It can't be a new scientific thing that we could find.
It doesn't have to be a weird alien thing.
It doesn't
like,
have to be.
I understand why people like need there to not be aliens and like need to find another way. Right. But like not trying to just be like, oh, this is weird. Let's like genuinely try to figure out what it is.
Right. And I want to get into some paranormal explanations because my mind went, you know, first thing to like, it's constantly talked about with falling stars, and it's talked about with a very particular, and most of the stories will leave out the fact that it's green fireballs almost every one of these times. And then other, you can find the sources that are like, no, this was a green fireball. This is that unexplained type of meteorite that science doesn't fully explain. And look, I know people say in the comments, there's a certain type, it's magnesium or something that burns green. It can be found in meteorites. Yes, there's that. And that's a well-known thing. Then there's green flash meteorites, which literally flash, light up the entire sky green and turn and do things that are like not common. And right. not one of them has ever been found.
Meteorites.
Right. So again, even the United States government went, that's not just a magnesium or whatever type meteorite. That is something weird. And we don't know what it is. There's some supernatural weirdness around this. And I've seen one and it freaked me out. And I've seen a lot of meteors and, you know, falling stars, stuff like that. But this green meteorite was freaking something else. So I have to ask the question, is this like residue from fallen angels? Like, are the green fireballs, are they something to do with like something supernatural? You know, is it UFOs, fallen angels, something? And I'm just, and that's just a question in my mind that I'm like, I don't really have any way to look into this. But I was curious if other people had theorized similar things, if there was references in the Bible that I was missing or something like that. And I didn't find anything like that, but I did find something that I'd never, ever heard of before. And I think it's going to get an episode soon. And I want to ask you, have you ever heard of atmospheric beasts?
No.
I hadn't either, but apparently I was more familiar with them than I thought. I just never heard the name. So it's this really weird type of sky cryptid. And there's not a super ton of information on the, well, there is, but I didn't have a ton of time to look into it. It was the last thing I found today. So again, I just want to like posit this theory. They're also known as atmospheric jellyfish or sky serpents. And according to eyewitness reports, they're things that seem like living creatures, but they break all the usual rules that we apply to living things. They fly without the need for wings, and their bodies are only semi-solid, often partially invisible. Some say that they are the natural ether in the air manifesting in the shape of a beast. So this is alchemy again. This is like the primordial ooze creating thought beings or demonic beings out of the sky.
Yeah.
Sky serpents makes me think Quetzalcoatl, makes me think the Chinese dragons. Like these are forms of atmospheric beasts, according to some. And again, the jellyfish thing. Some also say that they're the unholy offspring of the Leviathan. So these are coming from like cryptozoology websites. Like people are reporting etheric sky dragons. And here's where it gets weird. It is said that when the atmospheric beasts die, they fall to the earth as a gelatinous mass that may resemble a green, purple, gray, or iridescent jelly that evaporates into nothing within minutes, hours, or at longest a few days. This is supposed to explain a type of anomalous event, pau d'Auxerre, also known as star jelly, that puzzled scientists for some time before they decided that pau d'Auxerre did not exist. Now,
so they're saying it's creatures that live up there that are falling down when they die.
It's some type of etheric, not quite in this world, sky beings. And there's pictures of these. And here's one of this sky whale thing. Right.
Okay. Is this a no? This isn't a real picture, right?
Artist renderings of what people have reported. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
There, you know, sky whale is something that you'll see often.
Whale is something that's very much in the like sky or space whale.
But tell me that doesn't look like the dragon from the Neverending Story.
I haven't seen it, but I believe you. But like heavily in the human imagination, sky whales. Like there's so many. They show up all over the place in stories.
And I didn't know that, but I had covered on Real Conspiracies, a game called Death Stranding. And I love the imagery in that game. And I said at the time, it was a 20-minute episode. I was like, look, there's 50 hours of gameplay / cutscenes, and there's like 9,000 routes to go. I'm going to pick one. I'm going to stick to 20 minutes. I'm going to talk about a few things that I find really interesting in the occult in this game. And I said, I'm going to leave a few things out. What I didn't realize is that it has this, like, I didn't know that it has atmospheric beasts. It not only depicts the sky whales throughout the game, but it depicts the sky jellyfish. Like, they're the two main, like, creatures that you fight throughout this game. I had no idea it would link back to this cryptid thing called atmospheric beasts. And again, like, I just find this so interesting. Last night, you were talking about dragons, and now I'm finding this star jelly that's supposed to be the residue of fallen sky beings that look in some cases like the type of Chinese dragon or the Quetzalcoatl or something like that, also known as like this jellyfish thing. And I find that funny because the one explanation from Washington was blown up jellyfish or something very jellyfish-like about this stuff.
Yeah.
And yet there's this atmospheric beast concept that I was just totally unfamiliar with. I don't have much to say on it other than now I'm curious about atmospheric beasts and the mythology around it. But what do you think? I mean, what do you think it is?
Who was it? Oh, no, it was Worm. What if those are the Egyptian flying snakes that the ibis ate? This stuff does show up in mythology. I need to, I want to get into this now. It's right. It's fascinating. I guess my biggest question about it would be, if there are those creatures up there, it seems like we should see more of the jelly than we're seeing. But if it disappears pretty quickly, maybe not.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is I didn't even read you all the accounts. They're happening all over the world. Like,
really?
I watched one today where there's this place in South America that is famous for UFO sightings, but it's so deep in the jungle that it's reported by like local village. I mean, what did we see last year? We saw that village in Venezuela or something like that where like those face peeler aliens are coming down, and because it's so far in the middle of nowhere, like very few people, like Tim Alberino and like one other person went there and talked to these villagers and like,
yeah.
And then the media just wrote it off as miners. The media quite literally tried to convince us that coal miners or gold miners were wearing wearing jetpacks and cutting villagers' faces off.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a better explanation. You know what I'm saying? So my point is, in those stories in the jungle, they're finding the star jelly all the time. But again, it disappears so fast, it's hard to collect. And then if you can collect it, you have to pay someone to look into it. And then you have to trust they didn't lose the samples like they did in Washington from a scientific community that seems content with just saying, I don't want to see this. I don't want to know.
Okay. Follow-up question. If it's these atmospheric beings, like let's say a sky whale falls out of the sky dead and gloops everywhere. Why is this connected with UFOs?
Well, I mean, that's the other interesting, that's more of like a John Keel point, because if you look back at UFO cases throughout all of history, we're just seeing them differently. And then the question becomes, are we filling in the gaps of things in the sky with what we want to see? Are we filling in a weird shape in the sky as what we saw in a sci-fi horror movie where they used to fill in the weird shapes in the sky as brooms, witches on brooms with the lights where were like lanterns. Thunderbirds were in America for a long time, and those reports drafted, you know, became Mothman, became whatever. So the question then is this some type of tulpa where we're giving it in our mind a shape that it doesn't have? Are we projecting onto it what we want to see and seeing back something that we want to see? And again, does that describe why people are seeing the colors differently? Is this a color that comes from another realm and we don't know how to see it? So some people are seeing it as yellow, and some people are seeing it as white, and some people are seeing it as purple. It's almost like that dress. You remember the whole dress thing where it's like, there had to have been some preconceived notion in people's minds that made the dress different, but we all witnessed it where people were adamant that it was one color and other people were adamant that it was another color, but it was the same picture. We're looking at the same screen.
Right. Unless we weren't. No, I'm just kidding. That one's all still so weird to me.
Right.
But okay, so the idea of sky whales, I've seen it more and more often in like contemporary literature. There's an episode in Doctor Who. There's some books I read. I think they're in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Like they're all over the place in all of this different, fairly recent literature. So are some people still seeing like a machine UFO, and some people seeing this thing that's been introduced in our like popular culture?
Do you remember that Mexican UFO recently?
Yeah.
If you looked at it, it looked like a disc UFO. But if you looked closer at it with the context of biblical angels, it looked like the Ezekiel wheel with the eye, right? Like people are looking at this thing and seeing a 1950s disc UFO, and other people are looking at it seeing an angel, an angelic being.
So maybe some people are looking at it and seeing a whale?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I think there's the idea of the whole, the idea of the, and again, this will have to be a future episode. This is just something I found at the end here. The idea of atmospheric beasts is that they're kind of in and out of this reality anyway.
Right.
So I don't know what that means for what we, how we see them. And they're also one of the least reported cryptids. So.
Right.
Or at least talked about. I've never really, I mean, I feel like I should know more about these.
Well, maybe because the problem is most people are seeing a machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's maybe coming back in, or as our culture shifts, maybe more we'll start to see something that looks a little more natural and a little less technological.
It's possible. Yeah, there's a couple of early chapters in the Mothman Prophecies from John Keel that like goes into this concept of like the reports are actually not that different, but we've just filled in the gaps of what we see. But I don't know. I don't know how it works. I think it's one of those things where it's just like we can only see the edges of it darkly, and everything else after that's guesswork. But final thoughts on Star Jelly. It doesn't have, you know, I just wanted to bring in the atmospheric beast thing. Do you think it's, what do you think?
I'm tripping up on the UFO versus more like biological creature. The like line between technology and creature is, but maybe that's the problem, is that it's never been technology.
Right. Maybe it is. And yeah, that, I don't know.
I mean, we've talked about for a long time how like all of our science and technology seems to go back to alchemy and whispers of fallen angels anyway. So I think the divide that we have in our minds between what's natural and what's tech is maybe, and what's spiritual.
Well, I mean, if you think too about a lot of UFO encounters, right? A lot of people who have seen and been on the spaceships, their reports are more something along the lines of sleep paralysis, where they're laying in bed, they have missing time, and then they say, and they had this entire thing, there was something different about their body. Like, they have all the signs of being abducted, they have the memories of being abducted, but no time passed. Like, it was something that happened.
Right.
Outside. Sorry, I said missing time. That's some of the cases. Other ones, there's no time passed at all, but they had weeks on a spaceship. You know what I mean? There's something there where these beings are incredibly deceptive, to the point where are we only seeing what they want us to see of them?
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, and if they are like angelic or fallen angelic beings, the idea would potentially be that they could present however the heck they wanted to present.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm just going with deer jizz. That's my final answer tonight, guys. Everything I said, forget it. There's just a lot of deer orgies happening throughout all of history.
That's okay, but hear me out. Sky whale jizz.
Sky whale jizz. I think we just answered. I think we just answered the question. All right, so that was the episode we had on the green blob from outer space. You can hear we got a little bit into the atmospheric beast. So if you had not listened to that episode yet, please check out that episode in season 4 of Conspiracy Pilled. And if you enjoyed this, please consider downloading the Locals app or coming over to conspiracypill.locals.com and supporting the show. For just $5 a month, you get a bonus unhinged episode every single week, and you save a little bit of money if you do it yearly. If a yearly subscription is $50 for the whole year, so that's basically 2 months for free. So that's, again, conspiracypill.locals.com. Consider supporting the show today. If not, we will see you guys, see you freeloaders, for the next Wednesday night show that we do every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a great night, everyone. God bless.